I know we're all feeling a bit sold out when it comes to lackluster, questionable CBD products. So if you're seeking truly beneficial wellness products and delicious flowers, skip the corporate CBD scams and purchase CBD buds and products with Soul. That's Simply Soul, Soul spelled S-O-L, just like the regeneratively grown, sun-soaked goodness cultivated in living soil out at the BIPOC and woman-owned Simply Soul Farm. When farmers with backgrounds in permaculture, herbalism, and the culinary arts, plus decades of cannabis experience, come together to create real, rapid-acting medicine, you know you can expect effectively and sustainably grown CBD flowers that are also some of the tastiest on the market. The best part? Accessibility is one of the main principles at Simply Soul, because health and vitality should never come at a high cost. Go to simplysoulfarms.com to check out the mission and support the vision by stocking up on some of the best, most affordable CBD products out there. Use discount code RISEUP10, that's RISEUP10, at checkout for an additional 10% off of all products. Hello, and welcome to episode 109 of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, the tarot, witchy pop culture, art and creativity, ancestral connection, and all forms of healing that can guide us toward collective liberation. This is your host, Tavi Elise. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy spring equinox. I am so grateful to be here with you today and to have made it through another gloomy, wet Oregon winter into spring. Every year I say, I'm not doing this shit anymore. I'm getting out of here. I'm leaving. And I threaten to move. And then, before I know it, scores of cherry blossom trees and magnolias erupt into a chorus of pinks and whites all around town. And I go for a hike somewhere with my sweetheart at one of the hundreds of stunning nature spots within an hour of my apartment. And look at that, abracadabra, surprise, I'm still here 15 years later. I don't know, man, it could be worse. I want to thank our patrons and our new followers and everyone who shared your lovely feedback with me about our last episode, 108, Pandemic Solidarity for the Long Future with Gata Salvaje. If you haven't checked that out yet, please do go give it a full and thorough listen. It's such a rad conversation, and I'm really just so proud of it. I got to attend the online Pandemic Solidarity BIPOC conference in Gathertown that we talk about in that episode that Gata was on the organizing committee for. And yeah, it was so dope and fun and electric. And I felt like I was like actually at a conference. It was so different than like Zoom. And I'm just really, yeah, so much gratitude to all of the organizers, all the attendees, and the performers who helped put it together. It was really unlike anything I've ever experienced before, and it gave me a lot of hope that I might not have to be totally socially isolated for the rest of my life, as somebody who really, really, really doesn't want to get COVID or long COVID. Yeah, and I'm excited to connect more with the community that I met there and with more BIPOC COVID conscious community. I am not good with Instagram DMs, but if you're interested in connecting with me, please do reach out. Find me on Signal or email me at manateemedicinals@gmail.com. Yes, also, you astute listener may have noticed there's some ads in this episode. That's because we have our first ever sponsor, Simply Soul Farm, and I'm simply stoked to be working with them. As I've mentioned in the past, we are at a point as a podcast where financially we need sponsors in addition to all of your Patreon support to keep making more episodes and growing. Each episode, my goal is to have 1 to 2 paid ads with ethically aligned small businesses or organizations and 1 free mutual aid ad spot that is for a fundraiser or a mutual aid fund for a group or an organization that needs a little boost. So if you're interested in becoming either a sponsor of the show or of being a mutual aid highlight, we have very reasonable rates. I'd love to hear from you. You can go ahead and fill out. It's the same form on the website. It's the guest inquiry form on my website, manateemedicinals.com. Please reach out. I'm really excited to connect with more small businesses. I'd like to remind you about all the different ways that you can tap in to support me and this show. I have some new medicine up in the apothecary, including my deeply beloved Cottonwood Chai CBD salve for pain, which is in 3 different sizes. And I recently posted a product deep dive about that over on the Patreon that tells you all about it. You can also read about it just on the website. And a reminder that if you join our Patreon for as low as $2 a month, you get 20% off of anything in my apothecary when you enter a special checkout code. I'm going to be making like a real Instagram post about it soon, but I am offering one-on-one peer support consultations and herbal support consultations. That's also on my website under the services tab. Other than that, I would love to see some new folks over on the Patreon, and I would also love to see some new reviews and ratings of the show up on Spotify and Apple Pods. Please do that if you can. Take a few seconds. It's free, it's quick, and it helps new people find us. Okay. Let's get into this week's episode. At this moment of very visible societal crumbling, where we are watching the seams of everything we knew falling apart, as we watch fascist oligarchs the world over scrambling in a mad dash to be king shit of heteropatriarchy mountain, terrible mountain, don't visit it, would not recommend, before we finish sharpening our guillotine blades. And the gears of our day-to-day are still turning in an increasingly painful rhythm as we witness genocide and mass death and disablement. And rent is still due? Really? I don't know. Sounds fake to me. We as a society are redefining our relationship with, among many other things, with our money, with our businesses, with our life's missions and our soul purposes, like beyond a job, like what are we here to do? We're redefining what do we think these things are or could or should be. How can we fight a system while being forced to exist within it? How can we move from surviving to thriving, financially and otherwise? And is there a way to do so without collapsing into a sinkhole of guilt or shame or other emotions? I don't claim to have any concrete answers myself, but I do think that my guest today is moving in a direction with her mission and her work that feels like a fresh approach to stepping into our own power, sans exploitation. I also think that having open and honest conversations about these kinds of topics can really help to open some hearts and some minds and doors for people. It certainly opened some for me. This is a fun, a spicy, and a dynamic chat that gets into so many different things. And I honestly think it's pretty edgy. And I mean edgy, not like emotionally edgy. I mean like subversive. As somebody who struggles with my own relationship to money, always have, and my relationship to owning a business, I have a pretty visceral reaction to anything that even superficially looks like trendy girl boss capitalism speak. So getting to know Kara, who works in this realm that is different from my realm in many ways, and also getting to experience her work personally has been inspiring and eye-opening for me, because it's refreshing to see someone so smart and so driven and so ethically aligned with me somebody who's actively working in the business realm to change things for the better by helping other healing practitioners love themselves and what they do. With that, I hope you enjoy today's episode with Kara Kovacs. Kara Kovacs, a trauma-informed empowerment coach and intersectional feminist, holds a magna cum laude degree in women's studies from the University of Florida. Recognized by Wanderlust as one of 35 people under 35 to watch in wellness, Kara has carved a path of success in her sixth year of multi-six-figure entrepreneurship. She's not just a coach, she's a dream actualizer, having guided countless individuals to manifest their deepest aspirations and make millions while creating soul-infused work with impact. Kara boasts additional credentials from New York University's Silver School of Social Work, a 600-hour VITA coaching certification, and accreditation from the Ethical Coaching Collective. She is a Virgo and the proud dog mom of a very neurotic corgi. Please join me in welcoming Kara Kovacs to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. Hi, Kara.
Hi, thank you for having me. And for everybody wondering, my dog is a Virgo moon, thus I think.
Oh.
Her neuroses.
Virgo for Virgo. We have a lot of Virgos on the podcast, and I always say it's not intentional, just what winds up happening. I count your dog as a Virgo.
There's a new Amazon show called I'm a Virgo.
Yeah, it's Boots Riley.
It's so good. Have you seen it?
I haven't yet. I haven't, but I really want to.
I was about to get excited that I finally found someone I could talk to about it, because I literally, in my group chats, I'm like, can somebody please watch this so that I can talk to somebody about it? Anyway, an early plug for that show. It was so good and really impactful and talks about capitalism in a really unique way.
Well, yeah, Boots Riley is really good at that. I don't know if you saw Sorry to Bother You, but that came out a while ago, but that's another film of his. He's wonderful. And I will watch that show and I will talk with you about it. well, thank you so much for making time for us and me in this show today. How are you doing today?
As I mentioned to you before I got on, I'm recovering from a weekend of teaching my clients in person, which is always magical and exhausting at the same time. So slowly putting myself together. I had my large group program yesterday, and I was like, if half of my face is doing something that the other half of my face is not doing, I'm just like not fully caught up to myself yet, but happy to be here.
Yeah, no, I hear that. It's a good feeling being, I feel like being in person with people these days feels like a rare and magnificent feeling sometimes when it's intentional and you're with good folks. So I'm glad. It sounds like your heart is full, even if your head is might be a little slightly empty.
Yeah, and it's nice too. You know, some people you work with for years and you've never met in person. Like I had a client come from Canada and a client come from Honduras and Denver. So it's nice to like get to meet people that you haven't met and to be like, whoa, you're way taller than I thought you were going to be.
Oh, that sounds really lovely. Well, I read a little bit of your bio, but it's been so nice getting to know you over the last few months. I'll talk a little bit more about this, but I love like how the timing worked out with this episode because I don't know, the timing just kept getting pushed back. I'm like, whatever, it'll happen when it happens. But I had the opportunity to take your Soulful CEO, like a small workshop series that was 3 days last month. Was that in January?
I think it was, I can't remember when we closed the card. Yeah, last week of January. What is time?
I have no idea, especially, I don't know. yeah, that was like such a, I don't know. It's one thing to read about somebody on their website and to have a conversation with them, but to actually like get to tuck in and like experience your work and also experience that work with other people. Yeah, it really gave me a lot more experiential like context and I think insight into like what you do and how you're doing it. Yeah, I'd love us if you could just kind of tell us a little bit more about yourself and the work you're doing in the world.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for that feedback. I love teaching. I think it's like one of my favorite things to do. So I'm glad you came and invite people to come in the future. I teach free workshops a couple times a year, if not more. Whenever I'm excited about something, a free workshop comes out. I've been in private practice as a coach since 2018. And I decided to become a coach in the process because of realizing I was spending more on a year of grad school than I would make in a year as a social worker. And I was just like, this is not going to work. And I know that you can make really good money as a therapist, but I was looking at like a starting salary of $43,000 a year in New York City. And I was just like, I'm going to have to live really, really far out with like 4 roommates. Like this is, I mean, I have no disposable income. Like I didn't understand that I was digging myself into a deep well of debt to make so little money. And I think that a lot of people can relate to that. Maybe it's not their social work degree, but I was watching this YouTube video the other day about how the middle class is being so squished because the cost of goods and housing and education and health insurance are increasing so much, but the salaries that people make in their jobs are not increasing. And the byproduct of that is just people have less disposable income. And as somebody who lived in New York City for 10 years and now lives in LA, I've always lived in places that are expensive. And I just knew that those salaries were not going to be personally livable for me. And they're not livable for most people, but I don't think that people have an idea that something else could be possible for them. Anyway, it was around that time that I got introduced to what I'm sure some people listening to this have some familiarity with, which is like the seemingly untapped potential of or the seemingly untapped income potential of the coaching industry, where you get marketing ads like make $100,000 in your first 3 months as a coach. And I was like, what is this? It sounds like being a therapist, but you make more money. So I got a coaching certification in 2017. And I, at that time, was like reading tarot cards in bars all over New York City and doing all of these odd jobs. Like I was a personal assistant, I was a tutor, I was a babysitter. Like I did all of the things to make some side hustle money while I started my coaching practice. And what I started to see as I like dove more deeply into the industry and building my own body of work was, yes, there is this untapped income potential. Like you can make a lot of money in coaching, but that's not what the majority of people in coaching are making. And that there's this sort of promise or illusion that you're going to make lots of money really fast. And in order to do that, there's a lot of predatory sales techniques that people employ. There's a lot of like false scarcity that gets created. And I think there's a big lack of awareness around what it means to just sell people your services when you haven't built enough experience yet to know the validity or quality or safety of your services. And because I had come from working in social services and working in nonprofits and working in a domestic violence center, I had this educational background of like, wait a minute, I think some of these sales techniques, they feel bad in my body. So do I have a mindset block, which is what someone in the coaching industry might tell you that you have, or is there like something really more for me to explore here around how values aligned I find this methodology to be? And so through self-discovery and also finding my teachers in the coaching industry who I resonate with, who are largely like intersectional feminist, social justice based coaches who have also critically interrogated a lot of the more problematic things that we see in the coaching industry. And I cultivated a methodology that worked for me. And then I started to teach it. So I've been doing that now for the past couple of years. And I feel really like I've arrived at like what my voice in this space is. And it's to help service providers, not just coaches, like acupuncturists, herbalists, tarot card readers, basically anybody who's a service provider and a feminist, sell their services in a way that doesn't feel cringe or predatory or prey upon people's insecurities, like there are like mindset blocks to be fixed so that you can like somehow become enlightened and make millions of dollars, which I think is like the iffy side of personal development.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. I mean, I'm just sort of like on the periphery of the coaching industry and looking at how huge it is. It's a vast ocean. And a lot of that water is just like very problematic and like seemingly exploitative. And it feels, yeah, it has kind of like a gnarly energy to it, I think. And it definitely makes me feel hesitant to sign on to anybody's program or like, I think it's a big world. And so with what you just described, you talked a bit about this, but yeah, how do you locate yourself in that realm and what do you feel makes you really unique? And now that you feel, you know, really like grounded and like confident in what you're doing and how you're doing it.
I mean, I think what I will say is that there are good and bad professionals in every industry. Like we've all had a terrible visit at the urgent care center and a really good visit at the urgent care center. We've had a great waiter and a waiter in a bad mood. We've had a meeting with a first therapist that definitely was not the right therapist for us. And then like, hopefully we've all found a qualified support person. So I don't think that the coaching industry is any different. There's like good coaches and great coaches and coaches who I personally wouldn't say are good coaches who maybe think that they're good coaches. You know, I don't know. But I think the reason that this industry in particular gets that kind of reputation is because it's so largely unregulated. So even though you might be like a terrible therapist, you have an accreditation board that somebody could report you to for unethical behavior. Whereas in the coaching industry, you don't even need to be certified to put a shingle up on Instagram that announces that you're open to be selling your services to like heal people of complex PTSD with like no prior education or training and charging them upwards of $5,000 or $10,000 for it. So, you know, and the same could be said about like hiring a general contractor. Somebody could swindle you. Somebody could also fix your plumbing issue. Like it's happening in every single industry, but the coaching industry is unregulated. There's very little recourse for the harm that happens. And oftentimes because practitioners are not certified or educated in the way that therapists are, they often gaslight their clients into thinking that the client didn't believe hard enough, which is why the coaching didn't work, or the client is having a mindset block. And that's why they feel like what the coach did was wrong instead of like looking at personal accountability. So just like I don't think any teacher is representative of all teachers or any therapist is representative of all therapists, I don't feel representative of all coaches, but I do feel like part of my mission is to reshape the way in which coaches critically think about the harm that is possible in not being trauma-informed in some of the work that we do, and looking at how that plays out in our business practices. And I think about it in like larger frameworks of if you think about patriarchy, so much of what is icky in coaching is because it was largely started by white men in corporate environments who were trying to sell like optimization to corporations, or like be your best in like kind of a hyper masculine, not very embodied, performative way. And so if we want to create the feminist version of that, if we want to create the radicalized version of that, we have, just like in our own political beliefs or in our own sense of self-worth or in how we use magic or whatever, in how we view relationship, anything in our lives, we have to be critically minded about what parts we want to keep and what parts we want to throw away. And definitely like coming into the industry, because I was new, I was a sponge. I was like, oh, I'm going to learn this and I'm going to learn that. And I wasn't critically thinking about if it didn't resonate. I was thinking I'm a student and like, I need to learn how to do this to be really, really good at it. And then I employed some of the predatory sales techniques or like cringe thing. Like I've said things now that I just fundamentally do not even at all agree with whatsoever anymore. And that was really painful process of being like, I participated in things that I don't stand by. And I would say that I could similarly look to my own journey with dismantling white supremacy inside of myself of being like, oh, that was a fundamentally flawed belief system that I was indoctrinated into thinking was just the way that things are. And I had to critically interrogate it and disconnect from it. And I did that also with coaching and finding good teachers, like finding people that you really resonate with that you can learn from. And then also understanding that those people aren't perfect either. So not to take 100% of what everybody says as fact or put anybody on a pedestal. And I think in coaching too, people are putting their mentors on a pedestal because you admire people who, and that's why you want to learn from them. So it makes sense to do that. But like, ultimately we are all people. We're all going to be late to a meeting. Eventually we're all going to have like a bad day and say the wrong thing. And so if you expect perfection from people, like you're going to be the one who inevitably gets disappointed.
Mm-hmm. No, that's all very real. And thanks for sharing that perspective. Yeah, maybe we could rewind a little bit and just for anybody who is not super familiar with the difference between, because I think like, I don't know, I'm thinking about, I don't know, expectations of a coach or of any healing practitioner. And I think sometimes people wind up in a harmful, not to blame the person, but like sometimes people wind up in like a harmful situation or in a relationship with a coach or a therapist or a mentor or whatever, like sometimes because clear expectations and like scope of practice limitations weren't like put in place at the beginning, or maybe they didn't know what they were getting into or what they were signing up for. So maybe you could like give a little bit of some sort of a delineation between like, when would somebody go see a coach? And I know there's a million different types of coaches, but like, when would somebody go to see a coach versus a therapist?
I mean, I would, again, like, I think it's better to speak for myself because I'm not representative of all coaches. I can speak as somebody who has a lot of industry experience. I can speak as somebody who the majority of my private clients are coaches. So like knowing what their businesses are, but I work within a very niche part of the industry. And that's like the people who I feel really fundamentally care about doing this work ethically. So I can't speak for the industry as a whole, as far as that question is concerned. And I think that sometimes it can be really supportive to have both. I think the power in coaching is getting somebody who is uniquely specialized to help with a very hyper-specific thing that you're dealing with. So in my case, like I'm a business coach for feminist entrepreneurs. And if you are looking to build a business and you want an ethical feminist framework, you're going to come to me. You're not going to go to a therapist to talk to them about that. In my own experience with coaches I've worked with, like I'm polyamorous, and working with a coach who specifically worked with polyamorous clients and whose entire practice was about relational theory as it relates to polyamorous people. I love my therapist, but like there was no replacement for that experience. I have a client who's a pelvic pain coach. So she helps people who have been seeing doctors for years and basically said, it's all in your head. Like then they are living with chronic pain. She helps them greatly reduce the amount of pain that they experience, sometimes completely eliminating it. So like the people that I coach, they work so specifically in a niche client population that I fully believe that there's no more qualified person on earth than some of my clients for the people in which they support. Whereas Monica, my therapist, I go see Monica and I talk about my whole life. I bitch about something that happened last week that's bothering me. I talk about like the way that I'm processing the changes that are happening in my family from an emotional perspective. And there are general life coaches who help you, you know, with personal empowerment or processing a family trauma. But I do think often the people who are most qualified to be coaches with a high level of specificity, and this is not to knock general life coaches, there are a lot of general life coaches in my community, but they start out general because they are like figuring out who it is that they love to work with, and then they niche as a result of being like, oh my God, it was always this, like I loved working with this kind of person, this is why I felt the calling to start this kind of business, and then they niche. And I think because of like marketing lingo, people think that they need a niche in order to start. But if you fabricate what your niche is just to try to market to someone, there's some false advertising there because you don't really feel strongly enough about that population to have this strong why or this strong mission around serving them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great to like start out as a general life coach. Maybe you have the feel for the kind of people that you want to support. And then as you work with those people, you'll understand very clearly what it is you want to work with them and why. So even if that ends up being something like, I want to work with postmenopausal women on reclaiming their confidence, going to somebody who specializes in that versus talking about your experience of confidence with your therapist, two totally different things. So what I would say is like coaches are for really looking critically at one thing you want to change in your life or a few things you want to change in your life and taking strategic action and implementing it over time. And therapist is hopefully a really great long-term support person who can help provide perspective and accountability and feedback and reframing and reflection about your life. And so I think that that is really the main difference. A lot of times people will say like therapists help you process your past and coaches help you build your future. But I know like if I'm going to work with somebody on building their business, mm-hmm. we're going to talk about their past. We're going to talk about all the reasons they don't want to be seen and all of their money trauma. So like, I wouldn't say that that's a great definition.
Yeah, yes. I'm just like, I'm having flashbacks to being in Soulful CEO because that was, even though it was just, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say lecture style class, but it was a webinar that you taught. I mean, there were a fair number of us present in Zoom and like, I don't know. I didn't really necessarily know what to expect going into it, but I wound up feeling some uncomfortable emotions come up. I don't know. I don't know if I could like list it out. It was a month ago. Just kind of like getting into people's, kind of like cracking open the door into like, okay, why aren't you showing up the way that you want to show up or the way that you know that you can show up? Like, what is beneath that? Like, yeah, you know that you're afraid of being seen, but why are you afraid of being seen? And how do you like override that or like move through it? And just to plug that workshop series, like, it was some really powerful work and Just speaking as, you know, I'm a service provider, and then I'm also a consumer, quite a bit of a, like, a service consumer, like on the, from the consumer side of things, like, I'm looking into developing like a coach relationship with somebody and hiring a coach in the next year. Because I've been in talk therapy for, you know, almost two thirds of my life at this point. Talk therapy has been invaluable. It's been really beneficial. I've had some wonderful relationships with people. My current therapist is like an ADHD, multiracial, queer, like fat, witchy person who has black kids. And like having somebody who's that hyper specific has been amazing for me. It's been really empowering, and we've been able to work on some great things together. And also, like, I don't know, sometimes you hit a wall. I feel like most therapeutic relationships, you hit some sort of a wall of, efficacy, like is this efficient? Is this, I don't know. I'll just speak for myself and like somebody who's been in talk therapy for a long time, that it has its limitations. It has had its limitations for me at a certain point. And then the coaching sessions that I've had with people, or even just taking your workshop and having more actionable things, come about, and like having some, I don't want to say pressure points, but sometimes talk therapy can become, I think what I'm trying to say, it can become very comfortable. Sometimes for me, it helps me, it kind of keeps me in a degree of stagnancy in my life, where I develop like a rapport with somebody where we're not really like, there's only so much that you can interrogate. And like, I hear this, I've had this conversation with other people on this podcast too. And I hear this, I kind of see, even just on social media, this awakening of people being like, damn, I've been in talk therapy for a really long time. And I think it has kept me living in my mind and like not being in my body. Kept me from moving forward in actionable ways. And it's been cycling in a loop of just talking about the same things over and over again, and then not actually doing anything about it. I think that's what I'm getting at.
I mean, I can really see that. Like, as somebody who's both been in therapy and somebody who's been trained in modalities that are more somatic based, and who does practices, whether they're coaching practices or magical practices that are somatic, because I'm the kind of person, and like, I don't know if you'll relate to this, and I don't think this is a good personality trait. I think it's like very Virgo. If something happens that pisses me off, I tell my mom, and then I tell my partner, and then I tell my best friend, and then I tell my other best friend, and then I tell my therapist. And it's like, I've said the same story 5 times. I've gotten everybody's opinion, and they all probably have different opinions. And I still am at a loss of what I'm going to do. I just gathered, and it felt good to like, I like talking and processing also Mercury and Virgo. Like, it feels good to talk about it with 5 different people, but to actually access what your own truth is from inside of you usually requires to like sit in quiet contemplation or journal or be self-reflective. And so sometimes there is a way in which talking about it is just like playing a tape on repeat.
Yeah.
Not really getting to the root of what it is that is your truth. And I think the resistance to being with that truth is it can often be something uncomfortable or something that we don't want to hear. And so the beauty I found, again, in facilitating and in experiencing somatic practices is that there's all this wisdom in the body that we as a society want to mute. If you have anxiety, you have a glass of wine, or you smoke a joint, or you take a pill. If you're angry, you want to avoid, push down, repress, distract yourself. Like, we get so much advice from larger society to like try to mute or look past those things. Like, growing up in my house, it was always like, keep yourself busy and then you won't have to think about it. And so talking about it, there's like air, it gets to be, you know, see the light, be witnessed. I think that's really important, but it doesn't address the somatic experience. And what we know from all forms of somatic therapy and some of the like really obvious literature that anybody would read when they would start looking at trauma, like The Body Keeps a Score, for example, is that trauma lives in the body. So it can't be processed in the mind. It is a somatic experience. It's a place of resonance within the body that you're actually like holding on to something. And what we did at my business mastermind over the weekend was I had everybody close their eyes and feel what a fuck yes felt like, feel what a no felt like, and feel like what their body knew was a yes, but their mind was trying to talk them out of. And because my job as a practitioner is to connect you to your own truth, not to tell you what your truth is. But even like a simple exercise like that, of like, what's my yes and what's my no, and actually feeling it, as opposed to, I thought that was wrong. Therapist, don't you think that was wrong? And you get to be seen and validated and have that mirrored back to you. But if inside of you, there's something that's unresolved that hasn't gotten space shed on it or worked through, it's still there. And there are so many great exercises for working through that. And in my own practice, like as a magical person, and as a polyamorous person, like I'll give this as an example because it was so potent and it happened yesterday. I was like working on the part of me that is not open to even believing that there could be somebody else out there who I like more than my partner. Because listen, I am dating, I am swiping, I am trying, I am looking, I'm going out. Like, I want everybody to stop telling me that I need to be trying. It feels like pressure. I don't want it. I'm not it, like the whole process of like putting myself out there for additional partnerships has felt really rife with like other people's expectations, my partner's expectations, my mother's expectations, this idea that I need to like fix the fact that I'm currently only in one relationship with somebody who has multiple relationships. And it just hasn't been fun, but the idea of meeting somebody that could feel expansive, that feels fun, right? So there was a distinction between the somatic experience of like, what if it was somebody that you really liked versus other people are telling me I should be doing this, and distinguishing the way that those two things felt. And so then I dropped more deeply into, and all of this is just like happening with me laying in bed with my eyes closed, thinking about it, which is something most people don't take the time to do, right? Or they're thinking about it in a way where they're obsessing about it. They're not actually connected to, okay, what physically happens in my body when I think about this thing, and like being in conversation with the body, as opposed to what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? What should I do on a loop in their mind? So anyway, I drop more deeply into like, it could be exciting. And then beneath the, it could be exciting was this real fundamental, it felt like a heavy brick in my chest where I couldn't push past it. And so then I'm like, okay, brick that's in my chest, like, what do you want to tell me? And it's like, that part of me doesn't believe that there's anybody else. Not even like doesn't want somebody else, but it's just like, you've gone on so many dates and like people are so annoying, like you're just not going to meet anybody else. And so it seems like a fruitless effort. And that feeling of like desperation and ick and tiredness and exhaustion, but the pressure from the outside sources is what's been driving all of my dating experiences. No wonder I'm not having very much fun. And so I made this conscious decision. I was like, I'm going to literally like hang out with the part that doesn't believe and start showing it evidence, like showing it evidence of how deserving I am of being loved, of all the people in my life, not just my partner, but my friends who show me the possibility that there is for deep connection and that there must be more than just these incredible people that I've met in my life so far. And I like went on a hike this morning and I thought about that on the hike. Now, being that kind of person, I'm not naturally that kind of person. I've been in different coaching containers for the last 10 years. So those practices and those ways of thinking about things come from being guided dozens, if not hundreds of times by practitioners who teach those kinds of tools. But I think that that's a really simple and also personal example of how like learning these kinds of things, you then can become responsible for actually shifting your experiences by being in relationship with the body. And that's what I think is so powerful about this work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing such a personal example. I was going to ask you for like if there's somatic practices that are particularly resonant for you right now. And that sounds like one of them. And I like the kindness, self-kindness, like polyamorous parts work.
Yeah. The example. Thing too about it, about parts work, is if you are frustrated at the stuck parts, they harden. So compassion is the most important part of having a practice like that actually be successful.
Yeah. Something I did a year ago was I was in a container, which was such an amazing, another niche thing to find. It was a therapy, like a formal therapeutic container for BIPOC femmes. It was like a pleasure, BIPOC femmes and like basically like pleasure activism. And that was really my first like formal introduction to parts work and into like internal IFS or internal family systems therapy, which I know I've heard you mention a few times, whether like in the CEO thing or on your podcast. Yeah, and I think parts work is definitely kind of like the way I want to go with therapy next, because it feels really like I'm like, all right, well, I spent the past 9 years unpacking and reorganizing and refolding the trauma closet. And I feel like I've got, you know, I feel really stable. But I think there's like actually a hidden door at the back of the trauma closet that I need to like creak open, and like there's some, you know, there's some parts inside of me that I need to be talking to.
Well, that's great self-awareness. You know where you're headed. You're headed to the door in the back.
I'm trying.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. So you have a degree in intersectional feminism, and I know that this lens is like a really big part of how you've envisioned and crafted your current business. Can you tell us more about how intersectionality impacts or plays out in the work you do? And like on that same tip, like how are you approaching this kind of work as a white woman in a way that feels ethically aligned with those values?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I would say that I had actually a BIPOC client reflect to me that that word is a word that belongs to the Black community. It is also what my degree is in. And I think it's just important to honor those roots. So I appreciate your framing of that. For me, the real heart of using intersectionality as a way to think about this work is because so much of personal development is so whitewashed that it doesn't hold space for the reality of people's experiences. It's like, I'm saying that, I know it's true, but it's like almost funny. It's like, yeah, like when you talk about manifesting, Rachel Cargill posted that post a couple of years ago that was like, did you manifest it or was it white privilege? And I think it's the same is true with like building a profitable online business. Did you manifest it or did you have a partner who could support your entire household while you worked on your business, whereas the other person had to work two part-time jobs and build their business at the same time? Did you manifest it or did you have generational wealth? Did you manifest it or did you have like a supportive community and prior experience with the skills that it takes to run a business in the first place? Like, there are just so many things that go into building successful online businesses. And I think that there are too many coaches who posture themselves as like, I increased my revenue really quickly and you can do it too. And then like the testimonials on their sales page reflect 2% of the results that the people who did their program actually got. And so essentially there's like this false advertising happening that also implies that if you don't get those results, it's because you didn't like mindset your way hard enough into getting those results. And I think that bringing intersectional perspectives into this work holds space for like one person has one money story because of one thing, and the other person has a vastly different other story because of their experiences. And you can't teach manifestation and business building and self-worth and embodying confidence and visibility with this one size fits all framework. And when you remove that word from the equation or the critical thinking about how you teach, it causes a lot of harm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like a really necessary thing for any service provider who's working with anybody who's different from themselves, which is everyone, to understand what intersectionality and the implications of it are and how our clients show up in the work, while also recognizing that like myself as a white woman, like that's not even my word, but it's such a fundamentally important concept.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about all that. Yeah. there's a lot in there. I think it's like very, it's such a slog trying to run any sort of a business right now. It's really hard to sell ourselves in this moment. And I think that it's been difficult for me to find sources of inspiration who are in anything related to any of my fields that like seem like they're kind of getting it right, or seem like they're, if nothing else, coming from a not just a well-intentioned place, but coming from like a well-informed place where they have some idea of like the framework of systemic oppression and harm and how that like, yeah, it's going to take a disabled business owner several times as long to like get to the same place as somebody who's able-bodied and like also has financial support from their independently wealthy husband or whatever it is. And there's a lot of, I don't want to say blind spots. I want to use a different word. There's a lot of things in people's periphery that they're not looking at, or that they haven't, yeah, as you said earlier, interrogated about themselves. So I really appreciate, especially after getting to experience your work. Yeah, I just want to say that I appreciate your approach and the language that you use and the way that you're trying to help people, because I think there are just like the conversations on social media around money and like scarcity mindset, they're sort of all over the place. And just when you're talking about the just manifest it, girl, like when you're talking about that sort of not tone deaf, but sort of just like unaware perspective that a lot of coaches and a lot of other professionals have. It's reminding me of like thinking about therapy and therapeutic language. It's reminding me of like CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy, and how that has, not so recently, it's been a while, that people have been talking about how harmful that framework can be, because it doesn't have it's a lot of like, first of all, it's a lot of heady work, and it's a lot of like, it doesn't really bring in the body a whole lot, but it also is very much like, well, just believe it, or there's a lot of, there's not any sort of analysis or bringing in of racism or ableism or sexism or homophobia and how those things would impact somebody's experience and therefore their healing path. It reminds me a lot of what we're talking about in the coaching industry too.
I mean, we also have to think like the word intersectional didn't even exist before 1989. The coaching industry is only a couple of decades old. So much of the language that we use around gender expansiveness is like 10 years old. And so I think the reason that a lot of these things are so problematic is because they were developed in a time where there wasn't an alternative. And so we have to imagine alternatives. And that's really why I teach selling the way that I teach selling, because I was in coaching certifications or programs or containers where like my coaches were like, you're graduating to a phase where the most committed clients will figure out a way to pay you. And they'd be bragging about some woman who took out like a 20% interest bank loan in order to pay in full. And I'm like, why should she have to do that when the other guy who, yeah, it's a large investment for him, but he's worked a high paying job and has been saving for the last 10 years. It's cutting into his savings for sure. But why should he not have to pay the 20% interest that this other woman is going to pay? Her lack of liquidity makes her less committed than him. Like, I disagree with you. So like, what's the new way? And I'm not going to say that I like invented it. There are definitely frameworks that I've invented and like language that I use that's very specific to me. And I've cultivated my own brand voice. And I think that's why I've been successful, because my people, and there are people in the industry who've been like craving that, like people are in my programs and they're like, I've been coaching for 4 years and I've always felt shitty about how I sell until I find you. So like, that's why my business exists. And like, I'm not the first person who made up different sales language. Even I just hired a marketing agency to help me get the word out about my signature program that you took the class series that was the sales generator for that. And I said to them, I was like, I'm not sure how we want to look at what our expectations of the quickness of results are, because I push a hard sell. I'm very much like, you should buy this. It will help you. And I stand by that. But I don't create false scarcity. I don't create false promises. Like, my sales method is basically just like, tell people the truth and do a good job. And so like, people buy from me, but it sometimes is a slower selling cycle because I'm not preying on their insecurities to try to get them to make a purchasing decision. Or I'm not saying things like, well, if you need to go talk to your husband about it, you probably just don't really trust yourself, which is like shit I've heard on a sales call, right? Where it's like you're gaslighting someone into thinking they need to buy your program. I don't use those kinds of selling techniques. So when people join my audience, they might take a class, but they might not purchase for 6 months. So knowing that, like, what kind of expectations should we have around the speed of results? Because like, I don't sell things like other people sell things.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you've had a hard time kind of swimming in the waters with a lot of marketing sharks? Like,
I think we're in different bodies of water.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, they're in one ocean, I'm in another ocean. There's less pollution in my ocean, but there's still pollution. Like, yeah. I don't. The other thing about this industry is like, I don't feel like there's really any competition. Like, I would not hire someone where they're in a competition with somebody else for me to be their client. I would hire the person who I felt most connected to. And so I know the same is true for my people. So I don't feel like I'm like working to out earn someone, or like if somebody joins their program, like they might sign up with me a year later. There's like more than enough people out here who need support. So I also feel like even if there were oceans, like the ocean's big enough for everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've got a manatee-based herbalism business, so I'm all about water metaphors. With that, maybe we could talk about a little bit about the ecosystem of your business. And I know you're in a little bit of a transition point right now this season. I'd love to talk about just kind of briefly sharing what your offerings are.
Yeah. So I am a one-on-one coach, and I would say that working with me one-on-one is for people who already have an established business. So for people who are like, what do I want my first offer to be? Or like, who do I want to serve and how do I want to serve them? They're a really good fit for what is now called Business Witch, but will likely be called Authentic Business Alchemy in a couple of months. We're rebranding. And it is the like, this is how to build your business foundations. This is how to create an offer. This is how to decide who it's for. This is how much it should cost. This is how to sell it. This is how to sell it without like accidentally harming your clients. This is what to do if somebody does a microaggression in your community space. This is how to address a refund request. Like basically everything that I wish that my coaching certification taught me about business, because I'm dual certified. I've done two certification programs, and there was literally no business in the second one. And in the first one, there was like a week's worth of business, and it was in a way that I didn't find particularly resonant. So I think view Business Witch as like the accompaniment to what any certification should have had. Or if you've been coaching or you're a service provider, like a hypnotherapist or something, and you're not seeing the sales results that you want in your business, it's going to help you build a sales and marketing framework that is value aligned and like not skeezy. That's the space where people are like, oh my God, I've been selling for 4 years and I never liked it. And now I know how to sell because I did your program. In my one-on-one practice, like, I don't want to spend time teaching somebody how to sell. I think it's fundamentally a waste of their money because it is a bespoke, elevated, highly involved service where like I'm editing all of your marketing campaigns and helping you co-create your launch strategy and looking at the words on your website and making sure that they're set up for people to purchase your offers. So because of that more dedicated and specific kind of support, there's a higher cost. And so somebody who's a good fit for that offer is already going to have a business. I'm helping their business make more money. And I view it as a kind of a no-brainer because it's a business expense that makes you more money. But if your systems are not set up for that to be a good fit for you, like I would just do business switch instead. And then in terms of being in a transition period, right now I'm decreasing the number of clients that I serve in a one-on-one capacity to really build out the infrastructure for the other program that I told you about, because I really think that it could serve tens of thousands of people. So my job right now is getting in front of those people so that they know that they can do business in a way that aligns with their values. And we were talking about, you know, earlier, the best way to control how much money you make nowadays is to be self-employed. And the best way to combat these never-ending hiking interest rates and costs of goods is actually to like not cap yourself on how much money you can make by working for somebody else who isn't going to increase your salary at the rate of inflation. And so I think that there's this limitless earning potential if you set yourself up for success in self-employment, and people need support in order to be able to do that. And I think that this program does that in a way that is really feminist-minded and thoughtful about the implications of selling things without turning into a used car salesman that's preying on people's insecurities.
Mm. Yeah.
Yay.
Great pitch. So
I mean, it in thinking about like scaling this program and hiring that marketing agency that I told you that I hired, I was kind of just like, I'm making a bet on a full house. I know people will buy it if they find out about it. My job is getting it in front of people, which is why, you know, I'm doing as many podcast interviews as I can do. And I think for people who are new to business, their work is on coming up with something that they feel that good about, because then it's very easy to sell it because you're just telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Yeah. Do you have, I mean, I know this is not asking you to like sum it all up in one like pithy sentence, but like, because I know that this is like a big core of what you're teaching, but yeah, what would you say to anyone listening who feels trapped by their hatred of capitalism, but also has something that they care about that they want to sell?
Nobody is benefiting from your hatred of capitalism being the thing that runs your decisions about how you operate your business, least of all you, but secondly, all the people that you could be helping if that wasn't the predominating factor in your decisions. Like, we all exist inside of capitalism and we can hate on it all we want, but the best way to combat that system is for you to actually thrive within it. And the more small business owners we have, the more competition there is against corporations. Like, I don't think that there's competition in the coaching industry, but I would rather buy my books from bookshop.org than Amazon. And I think that the same is true when we start to, you know, use our earning power and our dollars in how we vote. SCORE had a study, I think it was in 2021, that said that small business owners donate 250% more to local community initiatives. And like, nobody is surprised by that. And I also say this statistic all the time. According to Forbes, white men control 98% of capital wealth. Like, who do you think is investing in medical research? Who do you think is investing in mutual aid? Who do you think is investing in political campaigns? Who controls where we allocate money and resources? It's the 98% of white men who control capital wealth. Like, I feel most empowered to combat these systems that I don't like when I have access to capital to dismantle those systems. So opting out of that conversation, kind of like our upcoming election, like we may not like either of the options, but then like, what are you going to do about it? Are you just going to not vote at all? Are you going to vote for a third party candidate? Are you going to vote for the lesser of two evils? I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I'm here to remind you that there is an impact of opting out. And I think people who feel so worn down by the toxicity of capitalism. Sorry, that was my blood sugar monitor. Why did it fail?
Oh, no, that's important.
It's okay. It's fine. I'll fix that in a second. But I think people who are like so worn down by the toxicity of capitalism are valid. Like, same, same. I find it exhausting and like not particularly fun either. And like, we've got a fucking job to do. And I'm not going to rage against the machine without building a new machine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like, that's the whole of this podcast right there. It's like, it's like, what is the new machine and how are we building it? And is it a machine?
Yeah.
This episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast is brought to you by Simply Soul. Soul spelled S-O-L, which is cultivating some truly soulful offerings out at their Oregon-based farm to tantalize the senses, relax the mind, and most importantly, soothe your health concerns with ease. All their CBD offerings feature ultra-low to no THC, guaranteeing you the remedial experience you need without any psychoactive effects you don't. Their Pink Panther CBD flower hits as sleek and smooth as it sounds, with a fruity tropical flavor that brings calming energy and creative inspiration. With more flower varieties like the delicious as it sounds cookie dough, the clarifying lemongrass CBG, and the stunningly beautiful sapphire, plus more, you can assemble your own springtime boutique bouquet to love that will love you right back. Smoking not your thing? No worries. Medicinal abundance abounds with a plethora of pesticide-free medicines, including topical pain relief products, Good Vibes CBD gummies, and other bulk herbs and herbal tinctures like ashwagandha, Oregon grapefruit, and hawthorn berry. Of course, I gotta tell you about their incredibly potent full-spectrum Rainbow Road CBGA tincture, which is a heavy hitter when it comes to all things nervous system and gut related, benefiting a wide range of ailments from insomnia and anxiety to IBS and tumor reduction. Y'all, I know I complain about my insomnia on the internet a lot. Well, guess why this partnership is happening? It's because I bought this tincture at the farmer's market last year. Yes, we have CBD farms at farmer's markets in Oregon. And I found out for myself why this formula of theirs is a bestseller. As someone who literally makes CBD medicine myself and has tried so many random, disappointing products searching for relief over the years, please believe me when I tell you that this tank is the truth. Just a single milliliter of Rainbow Road right before bedtime, along with my other herbs, and I am sleeping soundly through the night, waking up feeling refreshed, not groggy, and with lower pain and stiffness in my body. It don't get no better than that. Don't take my word for it, though. Get yourself some sustainably grown, handcrafted, soulful wellness from Simply Soul at simplysoulfarms.com and see for yourself. Simply Soul ships to all 50 states, and international shipping may be available depending on where you live. All flower is 25% off on their website this season, but you can also use my discount code RISEUP10 at checkout for an additional 10% off all products.
With that, this seems like a good segue into, are there any patterns that you're noticing come up working with clients in recent times? And that could be in relation to astrology, in relation to 2024 as a strength card year, or anything else?
I mean, I will say, like, 2023 was the first year that my business made less money than the year prior. And I was like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? And then I got on the phone with my accountant to do my taxes. And he was like, another profitable, great year for your business. And I was like, Rory, what the fuck are you talking about? I made less money. And he was like, you made less money than other people made less money. And I think a pattern that I've seen with all my clients is a little bit of a collective freak out because people have less disposable income right now, and that's impacted how much money small business owners are making. And I have to remind myself, as much as I have to remind my clients, that like oftentimes you are doing the most. You're putting yourself out there, you're pitching your offers, you're following up, you're creating community, you're putting in a lot of work. And you can't control the economy. So you didn't do anything wrong if you made less money last year. And I'm saying the same thing to myself. I think too, there and related to that, my clients have a tendency to make that their perception of results mean something about their worth as a person. That's very dangerous territory to tread in. And also it's just like not true. Like people are like, oh, nobody bought my thing. Nobody likes me. And it's like, no, your marketing plan had like lots of holes in it. Your copy was not clear. Nobody knew who it was for, and you didn't get it in front of the right people. That doesn't mean that your business isn't viable. It means that like you need to learn how to write better copy. There's like a skill gap that you need to fill. But I think people make these things so personal, and they largely get in their own way because of them. And they're more caught up on like who unsubscribed from their email list than like recognizing that those people who unsubscribed were never going to buy anything, and to serve the people who are still there. So I think that there's just a lot of ways in which people could be getting out of their own way by not making the results personal and just thinking about like how they really want to serve.
Yeah. Well, there's the thinking of, I do want to add to that, that like there's all sorts of personal internal like mindset things we could be adjusting for sure in terms of not equating ourselves with our business, or not equating our self-worth with our productivity, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's also just like the very real external crushing oppression that is like all around us and feels like, you know, really feels like a being inside a pressure cooker right now. And the fact that I saw a statistic this week that is American households are paying on average like $605 more on groceries a month than we have in like the most recent years. So just like the amount, the sheer amount of, I mean, I'm spending less on I'm spending less on small businesses. I'm spending less money in general because I have less less disposable income. So just, yeah, that remembering that reality of where our economy is, and also just kind of the pressures that people are under. I think it's I anytime I have to spend more than $100 on something, I have not the sort of meltdown that I used to have, but I have to have an internal conversation with myself where I like prioritize what I'm spending my money on, because I don't have a lot of it.
And I think it's important to remember that like that people are being really critical with where they put their money right now. And at the same time, there's still an infinite market for your services. So like with my programs, for example, one of the reasons that I created them is because I knew I had the literal time limitation of not being able really to have more than 12 clients at any given time. But also really being like, I don't think somebody should be paying me one-on-one coaching prices to learn how to sell something. Like I could create something that was a 12th of the price of that, that they could then learn themselves how to do. And so in my mind, that's like a no-brainer to invest in something like that, because by the time one person purchases your services, you've made your money back. But I think for a lot of people, they're like, where are those people that are going to purchase my services right now? Because they are looking at their own spending and they're like, well, I don't have disposable income. And then they're projecting that into the wallets of other people. And I think it's really important to remember that, yes, people are being more critical about how they're spending their money, and there are still people out there who need what you sell and really, really, really need it and have been looking for it for a long time. So your job is to go out there and find them. And there may be less of them out there than there were last year, but they're still out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a good reminder. It's kind of about striking a balance, I guess, and just remembering to not fully retreat into yourself because things feel shaky and things are shaky. And I think, yeah, part of speaking that truth is like acknowledging the shakiness and showing up anyway, showing up even when you're afraid, even when you're like anxious, even when you're stressed about finances or whatever else. And this is me saying it to myself as much as it is saying it to anyone else. Yeah, so how do you, in regards to identifying as a witch or otherwise, like how do you kind of identify spiritually? How do you locate your spiritual self? And like, how or why is that like a part of your of your work and how you show up?
Well, on my podcast, Business Witch, there is an episode from spring of 2023 with my mom, Michelle, that if people are interested, they can go check out. And I was raised in a household where connection to spirit was sort of unspokenly obvious, in the sense of like, my mom didn't have a particularly strong practice for spirituality and witchcraft when I was growing up, but it's also always been inherently who she is. So I always give the example of like, I would say something along the lines of there's a spirit in my room as a child, and she would be like, we'll just tell it to go away. Like there was never this sort of, oh, that isn't real. And there was also this casualness with which she would communicate with spirits that she wouldn't have called herself a witch. She wasn't actively engaging in spiritual practice at that time, but it was just like, that's how our house was. And then when I was in college, she like met her first spiritual community and became very involved, and they were doing like meditation circles and exchanging readings. And I remember at the time I was agnostic and I thought it was like really weird and that all of her friends were weird. But she would do things, you know, for me, like she's a Reiki master and she attuned me as a Reiki master, and like, you can feel them. Like she's a powerful witch. And right around the time that I started my business, or I should say the year before, my dad started having memory problems. So I went home and wanted to figure out like if he had dementia or Alzheimer's. So I went home for a number of months. And while I was home, I said to my mom, you know, I think while I'm here, I'd love to learn to read your deck. And she reads Lenormand, and she also is like the creator of a number of Lenormand decks, and it works as a medium now. And she was like, oh, that's so funny. I bought a new one last night. And so she handed me my first deck, and it was like very divine and how that sort of unfolded. And I already knew how to read it. I had watched her read so many times that I didn't have to learn. I didn't have to read the book. I already knew how to read it. And so then as I started my business, I was like doing all of those readings all over New York City. And I started a moon circle, like a Cancer moon, like very naturally attuned to also understand astrology without actually having to study it. It was like a language that I remembered I knew instead of one that I discovered. And that was so foundational in the starting of my business, because most of my clients came to me because they felt a spiritual resonance with my work. As I've grown in my practice as a witch and as a business coach, I've become more and more inspired and connected to the connection between business building as activism. And I see how, and this is not like a witch wound thing, I just see how there's a wider audience for what it is that I do if it's not necessarily related to spirituality. And witches have always been my people, the majority of my one-on-one client roster. Like most people that work with me, they work with me because they like love that I'm about that. It comes up in my client sessions. Like my mastermind was in town over the weekend, and like we finished it out by me giving everybody astrology readings. So I think it's like a really relevant part of my work and also my personal practice and my ancestral practice. But it is becoming less and less central to my work as a coach. Even though my podcast is called Business Witch, and I'm not changing that. And if somebody had a problem with me being a witch, I would say they probably shouldn't work with me.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know, that's an important thing to note. And it's also, you know, it's not a deal breaker for anyone who doesn't identify with that realm, but does want to work with you.
Totally. Alternatively, Republicans should not work with me.
Generally a good call.
I think that they would eventually, there would be conflict. So I just wouldn't. And also, I don't want to help their business succeed.
Yeah. I mean, set yourself up for success, honestly. Well, this has been so wonderful. I want to additionally plug your podcast, which I've been listening to lately. It's really great. And I want to say, like, I know everybody says sign up for my newsletter, but sign up for Kara's newsletter, because it's like there is a wealth of information in there. You're very generous with how much like just like free wisdom you're dispensing all the time. And it's not empty either. Like there's a lot of substance in like everything that you write and share, including in the free classes that you or workshops that you offer sometimes. So yeah, I definitely want to plug your newsletter because it's a good one.
Thank you. That makes me so happy when people say that. I hear that from people where they're like, I don't read other people's newsletters, but I read your newsletter. And with my one-on-one clients, I edit all of their newsletters. And I'm always like, where is the connection to like why people would want to open the next one? Like, so that's what I'm always thinking about is like making it so good that you have to open the next one. So I appreciate that reflection.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it. Well, yeah, just thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. Where can people, what do you have coming up? And where can people find you?
So in April, we're going to do something I'm calling an ethical sales incubator. It's going to be a tiered pricing dependent on how much money your business has made. So if your business hasn't made any money yet, but you're curious about selling, it'll be the lowest tier. And that'll come out in April. So if you're on my email list or you follow me on Instagram at Kara Kovacs Coaching, you'll be able to find that. And it's going to be similarly to the Soulful CEO class that you took, like a 3-class series that teaches you how my framework for selling. I think it's going to be really good. And then Business Witch, what we rename it, will relaunch in May. So those two things are coming up. But anything that I otherwise announce, you can find on KaraKovacs.com or at Kara Kovacs Coaching on Instagram.
Yay, wonderful. And I will put all that into the show notes. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kara. Anything else you wanted to hit on before we get out of here?
No, but thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.